Thank you very much, John. Thanks for deciding to invest your time with me this afternoon. You know, when you have a main stage and a breakout session, you always have this kind of dilemma about, like, which ideas you put where. So I made the call that I would save the $10 million ideas for the afternoon session. So as long as we understand that, you know, you're kind of the elite because you made it through the first session with my accent and now here you are. It's always interesting working in the States with that accent, of course. How I got here, you might be interested in how did you end up at the Taggart Symposium through South Africa and Toronto, is I went last year to the NAFA National Meeting in Washington, D.C. And my good buddy Tom Hegner said, you know, come and hang with me at my booth in D.C. and I'll introduce you to some folks. So 5 o'clock day one of the NAFA National last year in Washington, I went to the bar there and there was Tom sitting with the folks from Louisiana. Okay, and the one guy from Louisiana, the president of NAFA Louisiana, says, Tony, he says, you come on down there in Louisiana. He says, we get a bunch of jambalaya and booze and get in an RV and we go and sail caravan in Baton Rouge and Shreveport. It was a lot of fun. I said, Tom, what did he just say? Because I don't know what he said, but he was laughing a lot at what he said, so it must have been funny. He said, no, they just invited you to come on the sales caravan as a speaker, which I did in January. Put on 15 pounds in 1 week. If you've never eaten blackened alligator and squirrel stew, I need to tell you it's the only way to go. And we kind of liked each other that week, and that's how I got referred through them to Taggart Symposium, and a couple of folks invited me here. And so now, here we are with a breakout session. You don't need to write down any of these slides once again. Just make sure that I get your cards and I will send you this afternoon's slides for you to use. Remember this morning I was talking about the experiential marketing business. It's the experience that we give to clients that's more important than anything else. It's how we make people feel. Because at the end of the day, we have to get referred based on the good work that we do that was different, that differentiated ourselves. So I'll give you an example. My good friend Bruce Etherington tells me that the biggest innovation he made in his business, we were talking in his office recently, he says he takes the sample financial plan, or he takes the financial plan, you know, you're creating a financial plan for a couple, or a report on their estate planning and their life insurance needs, etc., and he goes to Google Images, and he chooses three Google Images relating to what interests that family. So here we have a family, and Dad's pretty much into chess. So there's a chess piece over there, and mom's, oh, she's into her bridge club, so there's the cards over there, and the daughter plays a hockey for the Guelph University Bulldogs hockey team, women's hockey team, right? So there's the mascot or the logo over there. And he says he's sitting with this financial plan in front of this high-wealth couple, and the wife looks, and she looks at this with the three logos on that have real meaning and relevance to her family. And she says to her husband, I don't know who this guy is or what he's selling, but if you're not buying it, I am tonight. Because he's the first person who's given some thought to exactly who this couple is. You see, we can do mass customization in today's microtechnology world. You can go into Google Images and you can choose a picture of a chess player, a water skier, a snow skier, an ice climber, a golfer, or whatever, and you can build a story. So it's the experience we give people. It's the feeling that we give people. The Wall Street Journal, about 4 or 5 months ago, I was in Buffalo, flying to go and speak somewhere in the States, and I always fly to Buffalo when I can, because the airfares are kind of cheap out of there compared to Toronto Airport. And I picked up the newspaper which had announced that the Wall Street Journal had a survey on retirement planning. This was about 4 or 5 months ago. That said that 49% of couples in the United States have a disagreement about the date that the retirement will happen, and 51% of them have a disagreement about the number of dollars that need to be delivered on that day. Which means you could take both of those and say 50% of the time, your new prospect, that couple that you visit with, Bob and Molly Jones at the kitchen table, right? 50% of the time, they don't agree on those two fronts. Well, I'm the guy that says you've got to take the complex and keep it simple. Yes, you could take the Wall Street Journal retirement planning survey and you could print it and you could talk through the graphs and charts with your clients, but that would be complicated. You always get to complicate afterwards if you start simple, but you don't get to simplify after you start complicated. I'll give you a classic example from the world. O.J. Simpson. I'm an expert at the O.J. Simpson trial if you're interested. haven't got time this afternoon to prove to you exactly what happened. It was his son Jason that did it, and he went to clean up, but we won't go there. So the chances that OJ wasn't at the scene or guilty, according to the blood evidence, was 1 in 4.5 times the population of the planet Earth. It was 1 in 28 billion. But it didn't matter to the greatest master salesman in the history of the legal industry, the late Johnny Cochran. And I say that with due respect, master salesman. Because he stood there before the jury and said, I hope you guys understood this blood evidence, because I was confused as anything for the last 3 months. He says, I just couldn't get out of my mind that that glove never fit my client's hand. So let me make it real simple. When you walk in there, if the glove didn't fit, you have to acquit. If the glove didn't fit, you had to acquit. Turns out, if you read OJ's agent's book, they took him off his arthritis medication 2 weeks before they knew Chris Darden would force him to try on the glove, thereby ensuring that his hand swelled twice the size and made sure that the glove didn't fit. Well, isn't that a brilliant example of the fact that it's persuasion that sells, it's not fact that sells necessarily? So you could take the retirement planning survey from the Wall Street Journal, and here's what I want you folks to do. You're going to Staples, if you remember my morning session, you're going to Staples to guide those post-it notes to put the E on there to stick on the signature strip to remind the client about what's the expiry date on your parents' financial plan. While you're at Staples, I want you to buy some plain 3x5 cards. This is compliance approved by every company in America. Plain 3x5 cards. And what you do is on the one card you put their his, and on the other card you put their hers. And one says the date, and the other one says the dollars that need to be delivered on that date. And when you're sitting with Bob and Molly at the dining room table, you know, most folks are pretty courteous these days. You go visit with them in their home, they'll say, would you like some coffee? Would you like something to drink? Start saying yes. Say, yes, I'd love a cup of coffee. And Molly, while you're getting me the cup of coffee, I want you to complete this card in the kitchen. Write down the date that the retirement is happening in this house, and I want you to write down the total asset base or amount of money that needs to be available and delivered on that date. And Bob, you stay here and you fill in your card. And according to the Wall Street Journal, at least 50% of the time, you're going to have the opportunity to sit there theatrically with that couple afterwards, and you take the two cards and you go, we have a disagreement. Because managing, creating and managing tension is an important part of our job. This business has lost the guts and the soul of the art of communication and negotiation and influence and persuasion. It has. The late, great Ben Feldman, 25,000 policies in 50 years. Do me a favor, folks. It's not a lot. It's only 500 a year. It's only one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one after dinner at night. He took some holidays, right? Ben Feldman, the greatest in history, taught us back then, there's a problem. And tonight we will discuss and debate the problem. You might get depressed about the problem. We might even have a fight about the problem. But the problem's not going away. It's getting more expensive every day. All we're going to do tonight is to decide who owns the problem. Because you can fill in some forms and I'll take this problem and give it to my insurance carrier partner because they are worth billions in assets and they can afford these problems. Or I'm going to leave the problem with you. But I would be interested to know what you intend to do to deal with this problem without my company's involvement. The premium's not the problem. The problem's the problem. The premium's the solution to the problem. Let's not get confused. Don't do my job, John. My job is to find you the premium. Where will I find you the premium? Well, let's look at your general insurances, okay? Bring me your auto and home policies, because if you're having a relationship with Chubb and Allstate and State Farm all at the same time and nationwide, I'll scratch around and find you $100 a month there. Let's look at debt consolidation issues. How much interest are you paying at the bank for credit cards, line of credit, all these other issues? You see, it's the experience that we give people, and I'm an expert. I'm a specialist at a lot of things. I'm an expert at a few. We have to give the client a magnificently different experience in order for the client to want to talk about us at the neighborhood barbecue, in order for the client to introduce us to other people, and then our business generates a certain amount of inbuilt momentum. So let's kind of go down a journey this afternoon, and before I even do, I want to share something philosophical with you. We come on Taggart symposiums, we go to NAFA, we go to MDRT, we go to PD days, you go to your company, elite convention or whatever. And I was at a conference with the late Stephen Covey, and seeing as I'm in Utah, it would be a good person to use as an example. Magnificent man. And the late Stephen Covey told us at this Dallas convention I was at, he says, seeing as I were in Dallas, I must tell you a Dallas story. He says, there were two guys at the National Sales Convention, 5 o'clock night one. And the proceedings had wrapped up, and they're sitting at the bar having a drink, and he says, the one guy's phone is going bzz, bzz, ring, ring, ding, ding, and it's lighting up and it's vibrating. And every time his phone dings or lights up or vibrates, he runs around the corner to take the call or is frantically texting. And he's been doing this all day at the back of the auditorium. So Roger, the guy, says to his buddy John, he says, you know, you've been doing that all day. He says, we spent 2 years qualifying for national sales. We've been sitting in the back all day. You missed half the sessions because you were outside on your phone. Can't you turn that thing off? He says, I can't turn that off. He says, why? He says, that's my wife contacting me. He says, really? He says, yeah. She says, I'm in trouble for 2 months before the National Sales Convention every year, and she doesn't talk to me for 2 weeks afterwards every time. So that's interesting. He says, so later on they're having a meal. He says, can I ask you, how did you and your wife meet? He said, we actually met at the National Sales Convention 5 years ago while we were married to other people. And Covey put some slides up there, and if the cap fits, folks, wear it. He put some slides up there that changed my life professionally in terms of my commitment to me. You cannot talk your way out of problems that you behaved your way into. You have to behave your way out of those problems. So you're sitting with me this afternoon and you're earning 80K, 180K, or 800,000 a year, whatever the number is. We do acknowledge that you might be a flick of the wrist or a $5,000 investment away from earning another $100,000. You might be a little bit of time, because you bring to me one of two things this afternoon. You've either got time, or you've got money, or you've got both. Decide which one you have more of. If you're making a lot of money, you have a tax problem, then you haven't got any time. Like, I couldn't see you next Wednesday, because you're booked, you're busy. Then you're not going to put some time into these things, you're going to put some money into these things. Or, you know, you've got some time because you're spending your time hanging out with the wrong people. Okay, and so you've got some time, and so you probably don't have that much money. Well, then put some time into things. In fact, I want to share with you a template before I even get going here this afternoon that works well for the rest of the speakers at this conference, and it works well for tomorrow's speakers, and in fact, any convention you go to. Because we walk out of here with a big file of notes and a commitment, and we're on fire, and we got that momentum, that inspirational momentum from the speakers, but then we get back to the office and the gremlins jump on us and say, me, 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 and we're going, okay, what do I now do? What do I now do with all these notes? What do I do with Morris's slides? What's the next step? So I want to share a template that works well for not just me, but everybody you hear at all these conferences. And just put their A, B, and C. A, and then put B, and then put C. A is a free item, so free is a good price. Would you agree? Like, if I suggest to you that you walk around telling people that you help protect middle-aged people from their parents, okay, it's free to tell people that, right? Doesn't cost you anything. That life insurance formula I did quickly this morning doesn't cost you anything. If you made the commitment to go and draw that and show that to one person a day, every day, 200 times a year, you're going to sell more life insurance. You're going to help more families. I would even say it's free for you to take a PDF of a sample financial plan and send it to every single prospective client with your confirmation email, which means before you get there, they can see that there's some science and math in the work that John does. It's a free item. The B items are things that are simple, but they take a little bit of time. So you might want to scribble that down. The simple things that take a bit of time. And the C items are the things that cost serious money. So let me give you an example of a couple of C items, because I know we probably have some big producers in the room. If you go to the local golf club and you say to the golf pro, because you know the golf pro is in the same business as the dentist and the psychiatrist, right? Like, the wealthy dentist is the one that looks at you, and if you haven't got a cavity, they take that hook, they make one. It's exactly how it works. The poor dentist is the one that says, you're in a picture of dental health, there's nothing wrong with you, you've got a clean checkup. Have you ever had a clean checkup with a dentist? There's always a little bit of work to be done, right? The poor psychiatrist is the one that says, you're imagining it, you're the picture of mental health. The wealthy psychiatrist doesn't say anything. Takes 2 pages of notes, you babble on for an hour, he reads the 2 pages back to you, or she does, and they look at you and say, you've got some issues. You've got some issues. You booked 10 appointments with my assistant, we sort your issues out, right? Well, the golf pro is the same thing. Graphpos make their money by fixing the problems they caused in the first place, because they mess up your swing and then sell you 10 lessons to take care of the problem they caused. At least that's what the cynical me says. So here's something that could cost you some money. You go and you have a session at the local golf club, and to do this, you better know which golfers break 80 and which ones don't break 100, because you would never take the people like me who do 14 kilometers because I zigzag between the fairways looking for my Pro V1s. Okay, I'm not exactly a great golfer, but I absolutely love the game. You wouldn't put me in the same short game clinic or winterize your golf game clinic as your golfers who are shooting 75 or 80, because they're going to get grumpy and think I'm an idiot, right? So this is where CRM systems come in. So you go to the golf pro and you say, I would like to bring my top 10 clients, and they're going to bring each two friends from work or golfing friends, and we're going to have something called winterize your golf game. And in spring, you have something called Tune Up Your Golf Game, the Spring Tune Up Clinic. Come and focus on your short game, 3 hours, round of drinks, stuffed eggs, and pretzels afterwards. Here's two tickets for you, Craig, to send or to give to colleagues at work or friends. And you know something? The golf pro should do it for free, because they're going to pick up a couple of private coaching clients. And you've got your 10 clients over there who bring 20 other strangers, and you could give them the financial resources pack if you really wanted to spend some money, which we described this morning. Ultimate gift DVD, last and final letter, sample of a plan, advice assessment, which I'm about to give you, Lynn Butler's book on estate planning through family meetings. As a thank you for being there, well, now you've got to have 20 of those kits. It might cost you $50. That's $1,000. For the people in this room, it's a decimal point on a half an extra policy that we sell. Or place in our book of business. But that costs you money. And you know something, you've got 20 golfers at your winterize your golf game or spring tune-up clinic going, gee, how good is this? John actually entertains his clients and gets them to improve their short game as the sun's coming out again. I wish my financial advisor did that. Maybe I should actually talk to John about my money. Those are the experiential marketing things that we need to focus on doing. But they do cost us a little bit of money. So let's kind of go through a list of some of the things that I think you could do that are free. Well, I'm giving you some taglines for your emails. The top one is my favorite one. I think this belongs on the back of your business card. If your business card says we do mutual funds, life insurance, living benefits, DI, and can help you with your mortgage too, it's boring. Nobody woke up this morning wanting to buy a mortgage or a mutual fund or whatever. But prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. What does your written financial plan look like? Now, you better be careful if you put that at the bottom of your electronic stationery if you haven't done a written financial plan for all of your current clients. So you've got to think smartly about this. But as far as I'm concerned, go and get some blank business cards from Staples. Do not put your securities license or your phone number or your logo on there. Just put that statement on there. And then Craig folds that in with his business cards, and when he visits with people, he says, here's my business card, and he gives his official business card. He says, but here's my real card. Prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. Do you have a written financial plan? Because you should have one. The Millionaire Next Door book, which you can buy for $5 on Amazon, had a wealth creation formula by these two Harvard professors. I'm sure you've worked with it. If you haven't, go and study it and where they get it from, which says that 10% of your gross annual income multiplied by your current age should be your net worth. So a doctor earning $50,000 a year who's currently 40 years old, you can do the sums. How much should they be worth net? Shouldn't he use $40,000 a year? I'd use a bigger figure than that. What are other things that are free? Aren't you getting sick and tired of people saying, I already have an insurance agent, we already have investments, I already have a financial advisor, I'm too busy, I have no interest in seeing you? Because you've got to have a way of dealing with it. I'm now giving you a strategy to deal with it. When people say this, I already have a financial advisor. So let's say John refers me to his brother-in-law, Craig, and I phone Craig. And when I'm on the phone with Craig, he says, I already have a financial advisor. I don't know where John gave you my name. That's wonderful. That's awesome. That's fabulous. I'm relieved to hear that you've received advice elsewhere. I'm a little bit more assertive. I say to the person, would you mind if I ask who you're with? They say, well, I'm with Sun Life or whatever. I'll say, even better, we do lots of work with Sun Life clients. But for nice people in Utah, that's probably too aggressive for you to say, so I left it out. So we skip to the next section over here. Would you like to pressure test the financial advice you've been receiving? Let's stop saying to people, would you like a second opinion? I don't think anybody woke up this morning wanting a second opinion on anything. Okay, no one did. So we use the words pressure test. Would you like to pressure test the advice you've been receiving? I'll send you our advice assessment checklist. You take 2 minutes to go through it, and if you don't see anything interesting, I'll go away and stop wasting your time. Does that sound fair? And when we finish the sentence saying, does that sound fair, the person believes they're being unfair unless they're willing to accept an email from you. And the key is that you're saying to Craig over there, Craig, let's just do 2 more minutes. I'll send you something which I know you think you're going to ignore, and he gives me his email address. Well, now I've got his email address, and I'm now going to send him what I'm providing you with, which is the advice assessment checklist. We've had enormous success with this. It fits on one page. It's very simple, and I'll go through a couple of elements of it with you. Question one, has a written financial plan been documented and updated at least annually to adjust for changed circumstances, market trading conditions, and latest carrier solutions? Okay, or insurance company solutions. You can change the wording slightly. So check yes, check no. Do you know that we got rid of 95% of people at that point who don't have a financial plan? Or we certainly got rid of 95% of our competitor advisors. Is the life insurance program inclusive of fully comprehensive critical illness benefits or just payable on death? Have the long-term care expenses been accounted for by the plan in order to protect the children's retirement from the unfunded health issues of the parents? Was the appropriate inflation indexing used in creating and funding the plan? If you read Ken Fisher's book called Debunkery, don't give it to your clients, they'll run in the opposite direction in terms of investment strategy. But Ken Fisher from Fisher Funds wrote a book called Debunkery. And he's got this thing in the book called Debunkery, and he's a billionaire, and you shouldn't argue with billionaires too often, the CEO of Fisher Funds. He says, doctors, pills, hospitals, and Caribbean cruises go up by a lot more than 3% a year inflation. He says, bread, butter, eggs, and milk go up by 3%. He says, but the funny thing is that when you're 70 and 80, you are shopping in a basket of doctors, pills, hospitals, and Caribbean cruises more than you are shopping in a basket of bread, butter, eggs, and milk. So real inflation in your 70s is probably 5 or 6%. I mean, just look at airline travel since 9/11. It's insane, you know. Air Canada says, oh, I'm sorry, you wanted a seatbelt. No, that's extra. Oh, you wanted a window that can close. No, that's extra. Airport levy, fill the tarmac, fix Pearson airport levy, 9/11 security tax levy, unionized people who take the ice pellets off the wings levy. It's insane. The ticket's $300, it's $700 by the time you're finished. So, inflation indexing must be correct. Life expectancy must be correct in the plan. What else? Does the plan include the correct blend of guaranteed income and lifestyle paychecks? Have the necessary allowances been made for legacy contributions to grandkids' financial well-being? Are their state plan distributions arranged with or without values guidelines? Has there been a family meeting, etc.? Use this advice assessment. Do yourselves a favor. Print it off. Carry 10 of them in the trunk of your car with the sample financial plan. Next one. An opportunity for you. Please write down there, Family and Friends Month. I want you to have a Family and Friends Month in the month of October or November. If you remember, when we joined this business, we had to draw up a list of those 200 victims. Remember the Project 200? The 200 people that you knew. It was the greatest work of fiction ever. And when we drew up that list, the problem is when we approach those people close to us in our life, we approach them in a kind of a Bambi in the headlights, grief-stricken, disjointed, and kind of rough fashion, because we didn't have our conversational skill down perfect, right? So, you know, you were across the table from Uncle Bob at the Thanksgiving or the Easter barbecue or whatever, and you just come into this business, and you'd been at Xerox 3 months ago. Now you were an expert in terms of wealth creation and risk management. And you said to Uncle Bob, but you know, Uncle Bob, you wouldn't by any chance be interested in letting me take a look at what life insurance you've got. And he went, no, we're good, thanks, we're fixed. And you went back and checked him off the list. Well, I got some good news for you here. I want you to think about this carefully. It has been 10, 15, 5 years, whatever the number might be. It's been a while since you re-engaged those people. There's people in your Android, your Apple, and your iPhone, and your BlackBerry right now who you've never even for a while or ever approached about our business. I need to tell you that if you did approach them 10 or 15 years ago and you haven't since approached them, they are living, according to our research, under a very dangerous assumption, And that is that John over here is not looking for new clients, because he hasn't asked them if he can take a look and give them a complimentary opinion. They think that people line up outside John's office every morning with their checkbook and their social security card waiting to throw their money at him.
They do.
They do? Well, then you stand up and finish the talk, because you know more than me. And so when I find that people engage their neighbors and engage the people in their life and their relatives and use the email that I'm about to give you, half the time the people come back and go, oh, I didn't know you were taking on new clients. I would have asked you years ago. Well, how do they know that you're taking on new clients? And what you can do is you can couch this in the term of what I call an anniversary month. So if you've been around 10 years in the business or 5 years in the business, I want you to make November your anniversary month. And you tell everybody in your social and immediate family circle, we are celebrating 5, 10, or 15 years. It's our anniversary month in November. And as part of our anniversary celebrations, we are coming past the door of all of those people who in year one never got an opportunity to work with me. Okay, we've built a formidable, successful practice. Can we get together? I never want to have to explain my absence in your life to anyone. Can we get together to take a look? Because since then, you have grown tremendously, but you've forgotten to ask those people. So here's the email that does a good job. George, obviously if his name is Richard, you'd plug Richard in at that point. I knew that punchline wouldn't get a laugh the second time I used it. There's something I've been wanting to run by you for quite some time, but was reluctant to make you feel uncomfortable in any way. This will arouse some curiosity. Please remove those brackets, folks. Okay? That's my note to you. Don't leave those brackets in. As you might already realize, I do some pretty important work for my clients. I help them to gain a high level of confidence, clarity, and control over their personal finances. Obviously, this type of work is very personal and confidential. And I just want to make sure that whatever advice you're currently getting is as complete and of the highest caliber possible. Would you be open to sitting down with me at some point for a complimentary assessment of your situation? And I promise that no other members of our family, church, Rotary Club, soccer team, whatever, bridge club, will become privy to our conversation. Who thinks you could use that note by a show of hands? Anyone? Okay, based on our relationship so far, which is very short term because you just met me this morning, what do you think you might attach to that email to add some further rocket fuel to your persuasive leverage in terms of getting in front of that person? Fabulous. A sample of the financial plan. Maybe if you'd packaged it nicely with a nice wax seal on the back, the template of the last and final letter. Okay. Why wouldn't you photocopy Lynn's book cover? You're allowed to do this. There's no copyright involved. You phone Lynn Butler and say, Morris said I must photocopy the cover of your book. She'll say, I want to sell books. You go for it. You want to put a JPEG of my book on your website and offer the book for free? You go for it. So what you can do is you can take a copy of or JPEG of the cover of that estate planning book and the contents page. You can scan the contents page and you can send that by PDF to your family members saying, or your friends saying to them, I'll bring you this book when we visit. Even if you just read the contents page of the book, it's tremendously disturbing. Okay? So there's a lot of things that you can include and attach. The advice assessment, why wouldn't you attach that, right? If you go to lifehappens.org, I don't know if you've checked out what Marvin Feldman is doing. It's phenomenal. The Life Foundation, lifehappens.org. On that website, there's a whole lot of life insurance claims videos, under insurance videos, long-term care videos, disability, etc. You should be building links to the Life Foundation videos into your communication with your clients. You just put a PS, John, click here to remind you why we did that work last year. And you're using the Life Foundation's technology and the millions that they have been spent on creating that website to convince your clients and resell your clients. You constantly got to sell the sizzle, not just the steak. So I want you to run a family and friends campaign, because at the end of the day, you have a responsibility. Life is very short. I have about 1,000 to 1,200 people every year on my one-year coaching program in various groups in various cities in North America. Then I have these relationships where I meet a couple of folks, and sometimes we have a longer-term relationship. I lose people all the time. I just came back from NAFA National Meeting in Las Vegas, flew in there on the Friday. The Thursday before, I'm sitting in the Vancouver Marriott Hotel at 5 o'clock with a guy by the name of John Sprague from Raymond James, who had missed the first module of my coaching program, had heard good things, wanted to jump on board. I said, well, John, meet me 5 o'clock. Let's meet and find out about your business. We sat down. We talked about his business. He left after an hour meeting, and I sent a note through to my office in Toronto and said, please get him registered, invoice Raymond James for the program. He's financed. He's paying it off monthly. Here's how it's going to work. I get a note the next morning. This is the day before the NAFA national meeting started. John Sprague passed away suddenly last night. Must have been within hours of having sat down with me. Healthy, slimmer than me, looking 42-year-old guy. People, you can lose relatives, you can lose friends like that. You don't want to be called upon to stand at the end of the oncology bed and say, have the people say, why is there financial pressure in this family? You don't want to be standing across that coffin when it goes into the ground and have people say, why has she got financial pain together with emotional pain? It's bad enough that those children lost their father. Now she's got to put for sale sign in the front yard and sell the beach house to educate the kids at college. Aren't you in this business? Didn't you have the conversation or the discussion? So as far as I'm concerned, if all your family and friends don't want to visit with you, they should sign a let me off the hook letter that says, I've today declined and refused to allow my friend, my relative, my cousin John to give me a complimentary financial opinion. And I expect him not to be communicated with regards to this decision at any point in the future. And then you say to your relative or friend, all we're going to do every year is we're going to celebrate the 1 year non-anniversary of you being my client. So every year we've got a client non-anniversary. I'm going to come back and ask you if you're still happy with your advisor and please sign the letter off again. So that if anyone ever sits with me and says, how come you never approached him, you can say 20 times in 20 years on the 5th of July, which was their non-client anniversary, every single year, I offered them my service, and for 20 years in a row, he declined. Because I told him I had a file open with his name in it, and we were either going to put a letter of decline or a financial plan in the file. Simple things. You see, you've got to be persistent, folks. You go and work out your 10 biggest clients. It's the clients where you were the most persistent. You hung in there a long time. You heard Kim's story this morning. 8 times that Brian had to have the discussion. 8 times. My friend Bruce Etherington sends non-client anniversary Christmas cards. Dear John, it's been 3 years today since you haven't been my client. Okay? Have a fabulous festive season. He sends one guy a card 5 years in a row. 5 years in a row. The 6th year, the guy sends him a card in November saying, dear Bruce, okay, beat you. Have a good Christmas. So Bruce sends him a card the next July saying, dear John, wanted to get in early. Have a good Christmas. Guy phones him. He says, I give up. He says, what do you mean you give up? He says, you know, for 7 years in a row, you sent me a card every single year. He says, and I figured out if this is how your prospects get treated, I can't imagine how you look after your clients. I'm coming in. He says, you're coming in? He says, sure. It's one of his biggest clients today. You got 50 people in the last year where there was something going on in their life. You don't know what's going on in their life. You wanted to come in and talk about a joint retirement plan. He just looked twice at his secretary at the company Christmas party, and they're in marital counseling, and there ain't no joint nothing in this house right now. Are they going to tell you that? Of course they're not. There are things that go on in people's lives, and you've got to go back to people and say, I came across a similar situation to yours last week. I was wondering if you'd like to reconsider. We met, we discussed, there were some issues or problems, or we didn't meet. Here's a book. I'm in your area anyway. Would you like a copy of this book? I'd love to visit with you. So, simple things that we can do to create a magnificent result. Let's talk about the phone quickly. I wanted to put something in this afternoon about the phone. I had an advisor who showed me the other day what he's saying on the phone. And this is what he says when he phones people. Good afternoon, Bob. This is Richard Jones calling from Investors Group. How are you today? Have I caught you at a bad time, or is this a convenient time to talk? And he said, so what do you think? I said, I'm not surprised you're starving. He was quite offended. I said, there's about 5 things wrong with that. He said, well, what do you mean there's 5 things wrong with it? I said, well, first of all, don't say that you're calling from, because every word that you waste in the first 30 seconds is a word that gets 1 foot in the grave in terms of influence with a person. Don't say you're calling from. The person knows you're calling from because they're on the phone too. They're not sick, I said. He was quite offended. I said, you don't say you're calling from. They know you're calling from. They know you're not flapping outside their window with a hang glider with a sign that says, would you like a policy? I said, stop identifying that you're phoning from Investors Group. I said, as soon as you say the word investors, investments, money, wealth, risk, insurance, whatever, the person's brain shuts down. I said, I checked with your compliance department. You are not legally required to identify where you are calling from before the first period at the end of the second sentence. You don't have to yet. I said, so don't give it away yet. I said to him, don't say to people, how are you? Leon Morris says most people's life is lousy, and when you say, how are you, you remind them of that fact. And how you are has got nothing to do with this person because you are a stranger. And stop introducing an objection which the person wasn't having, called, have I caught you at a bad time, or is this a convenient time to talk? So he was in pieces by this point. Well, this takes me another 3 hours to do, but basically I said to him, you've got to say, John, Anthony Morris here, Craig Jones asked me to give you a call. And you insert the name of the referrer really quickly. When Craig and I were doing some work last week, your name came up in conversation. In fact, he spoke rather highly of you. And Craig has suggested that you would be the one person who would completely relate to some of the unique wealth management and wealth and risk management solutions which we work with. And I'm in your area frequently. I'd love to spend 20 minutes with you exchanging some ideas. Would Thursday morning or afternoon suit you better? And now I'll deal with your objections. And I'm going to make this whole thing John's fault. Watch, because John was the referrer. If Craig, let's say, then says to me, well, I don't have any need for this. You're probably wasting your time. That's why it'll only be 20 minutes, because within 20 minutes we'll establish whether we're wasting each other's time. Would Wednesday morning or afternoon suit you better? Well, I don't know why John gave me your name. I have all the insurance that I need, and I'm very happy with my current financial advisor. I respect that completely, and I'll bear it in mind for when we meet. Would Wednesday morning or afternoon suit you better? And you've got to get to the point that the person realizes that, you know, you're better at this than they are. But eventually, after objection number 7, I'm going to say, you know something, John must have been mistaken when he identified you as the one person who would completely relate to some of our unique approaches. I apologize for wasting your time. I'll let him know. And you hang up on the person. And you phone John back and say, John, you know, I was talking to Craig this morning. He cut me off. He really didn't give me much of a chance to get a word in edgeways. But you and I must have been wrong, John, when you suggested he was the one person who would completely relate. Is there anyone else in your world who would be more suitable or more suitably matched for our practice? You have to remove the fear of the telephone. I have a lot of advisors who are not even making calls anymore. You know, they go and they sit at their desk any morning, and somehow they believe that the world economy is just going to focus on them in their office and deliver a whole lot of leads. You have to actively pursue this. You have to. So, there are three sources of revenue in your practice. I want you to think about this. Repeat business, referral business, and reputational marketing. I want you folks to go and do an analysis after today, because it's a pretty interesting exercise for you to do. Try and work out what percentage of your revenue in the last 12 months came from repeat business. And let me define repeat business. If Craig over here phones me and says, I have a new business partner, his name is John Homer, and Sarah has sold her shares, and John needs a 200 grand policy, I call that repeat business. Because it's a transaction, the door is open, there won't be many objections, I count that as repeat business. I count trail commissions as repeat business. I count another policy or a juvenile policy sold to a 40-year-old parent on their teenage kids, I count that as repeat business. So go and figure out what percentage of your gross in the last year was repeat. Then work out what percentage was referral business. Because by definition, once again, referrals mean a phone call was made on your behalf, or an email was sent on your behalf, or the person brings the person to a live meeting on your which you attend, or they send them a package of resources which intrigue and disturb them. Otherwise, it wasn't a referral. And then reputational business. And you know something? Reputational business is the Achilles heel of the industry. Why am I so busy as a coach running programs all over the place? Is because we're technically pretty good. We're pretty good at selling when we're in the door. But where we tend to have a bit of a weakness or an Achilles heel is creating marketing momentum so that there's constantly this steady stream of referrals, steady stream of appointments, first meetings in our calendar. So if we can increase that, it means trade show marketing, it means lunch and learns, it means that you've got to decide to go and do things that are a little bit outside of your comfort zone as a transaction-based person, but they become the things that make all the difference in the world. I do some private coaching with a select number of individuals, and I live in their practice 3 long days during the year. And then every month we have an accountability conversation on the phone, and I knock their head off if they don't implement what they said they'd implement. Okay, because it's pretty hardcore. They have to be accountable to me. And I have an individual in Oakville, Ontario, which is kind of our most upmarket suburb, I guess, in the whole of Ontario. And he will do $1 million in premium this year. In premium, okay, on the life and living benefits side. And he's a quiet, unassuming guy. The commission on $1 million in premium is quite formidable. But listen to what he says. He spends 80% of his time. He works 50 hours a week. He spends 80% of his time in front of or forming the relationships with people who can write those size checks. 80% of his time. He spends a huge amount of time at the Glen Abbey Golf Club, which is where they host the Canadian Open every 3 or 4 years. A huge amount of time. He spends a lot of time sponsoring golf days, and when he sponsors a golf day, my style, he doesn't sponsor his banner at the 19th, at the 16th hole, because everyone else is sponsoring the banner at the 16th hole. He's got these drinks coaster size messages, which we made for him, which go in the bottom of each one of the 18 golf cups. The first one says, is there a hole in your financial plan? See you at the 19th, because the golfer is going to retrieve their ball from the cup 18 times that day. The next one, there are no mulligans in your retirement plan. See you at the 19th hole. And these 18 messages, by the time he's there at the 19th hole, giving away financial resources packs and a golf bag and a lucky draw and everything else, people are going, I've been looking at your name the whole day. That's how to sponsor a golf day. It's a little bit different, but it's marketing. One has to do different types of marketing with people. You see, the reputational business feeds the referral business, which feeds the repeat business. Of course, the ultimate practice is where you get to a point that people just automatically shop with us again and again and again. And we just have to show up, and the clients are lining up there. Now, some of us understand this. There are individuals at this Taggart Symposium who figured out about 20 years ago that all you've got to do is find clients who are about 25 years, 30 years older than you, turn them into your client, and then sit back and wait until they die. And you get a second clip at the revenue as those assets drop to the kids. Well, we've got three generations right now. We've got 60 years, 65, and 70 year olds we should be talking to, values, trusts, family meetings, estate planning, not to become dependent on your children, etc. And we've got juveniles that won't be able to afford life insurance, and we've got current clients, and their other advisors as well. If you have business clients, you should be saying to your business clients before Christmas this year, I was working with your file and I've realized it's not a clever idea that I've never visited with your accountant and shown them the work that we've done. And November is accountant's month, and will you sign a letter of instruction that your accountant should take a meeting and take a look at the plans that we've created? And I'll go and meet with them. And then you phone the accountants and say, we share a client in John Homer, the business owner, and John was suggested it's a strong idea that you have a look at the plan we've created for him. And we were kind of hoping that we wouldn't be billed for the 20 minutes. We were kind of hoping we wouldn't be billed for the 20 minutes. But I guess if you need to bill anyone, you could bill me. And why would you make that an integrated part of your process with business owners? Because at the end of the day, the accountant hasn't got a documented written financial plan half of the time. We know this because the accountant is allowing their clients to have partnership and shareholder agreements that are actuarially deficient. That's how clever the accountant is. You know what an actuarially deficient partnership or shareholder agreement is? It's one that's built on possibility, which is the possibility Craig and I are business partners, one of us dies. There's a far greater probability in the next 20 years, which is that one of us gets diagnosed with cancer, heart attack, or stroke and can't work for a year. Now Craig's putting in 80 hours a week, not 40. I'm still drawing 10K a month out of the corporation, and Craig's wife is grumpy because she's not seeing him anymore. She's going, how come Morris is still drawing a check, hasn't worked for a year? Well, that's an actuarially deficient shareholder and partnership agreement. We have accountants of your business clients, with respect, I'll say this, who have allowed their clients to sign their life away at the bank. They've signed the beach house over to the bank because the bank doesn't loan money to anyone. The bank takes something that is worth more than the security that they need. Fact. That's why banks keep declaring a profit. Are you getting phone calls from your business clients saying, my accountant said because I just signed for another $250,000 lease, I need to buy more life insurance from you? We're not getting those phone calls, right? So this tells me that you focus on accountants and attorneys as potential strategic alliances, but in the first generation, you just focus on getting in front of them to demonstrate to them the importance of the right kind of planning principles. Something else I want you to do, and I'm going to give you the letter. I want you to take the person's financial plan, the client's financial plan if you've done one, if you're not doing financial plans, summarize on two pages what that client has. So John and Molly Jones, they live at 325 William Street. John works for ABC Construction at $75,000 a year. Molly's a kindergarten teacher at $35,000 a year. They have two children. They have a house valued at this. The mortgage is this size. Two pages of facts. I'm not just talking about what policies or investments they have with you. So you summarize two pages of facts as you understand that client situation. You then take a padded envelope. You get them at Staples, the padded ones. You get a padded bubble envelope and you put in there that list with this letter and a highlighter pen. You must put the highlighter pen in there. The reason for this is it's knobbly post. If I send John his mail for the day and there's an envelope and there's knobbly post in there, okay, there's something in there, he's going to open that envelope first. You also have a self-addressed stamped envelope back to John, or back to you, the advisor, self-addressed stamped envelope, full size, for them to slip these two sheets of facts back in, or the financial plan back in, having marked up with a highlighter pen any changes that there have been. There are babies being born in your client bank as you sit here, parents becoming grandparents, people being diagnosed critically ill, and there's going to be a funding problem behind it. There are people having babies, there are people getting married, there are people getting divorced, as we sit here in our own current client base. So what you've got to do with this exercise is you sit with your assistant and you say, we're going to do 25 of these every month. The first Wednesday of every month, we're going to send 25 of these to 25 of our clients, which means every year our clients will receive this letter that basically says, you know, it's important that I keep your file updated. Have there been any changes? Please set aside a few minutes to review the report we prepared and highlight any changes which may influence the results we're achieving. And for ease of convenience, I've enclosed a highlighter pen, or included a highlighter pen, in order for you to indicate the specific areas we may need to review. Please assist me in making your business and family dreams come true whilst protecting the risks along the way. I've provided a stamped self-addressed envelope in order for you to mail the highlighted pages back to me. And as usual, I'm going to give you everything because there's a shopping list. You need a bubble envelope, you need a highlighter pen, you need to identify your address on the back, and you need to follow it up with a phone call if they don't complete it. And the phone call, they're the words for the phone call. We did this with 50 advisors on my program 6 months in. I said, I want you to send this out to 100 clients. And the average number of clients who transacted with them in the following 6 month period was 17%. 17% is not bad, okay? Because you need to remind clients, I don't think our clients care about us. I think we've got a bloated sense of self-importance about the degree to which our clients go, you know, we just signed for extra obligations at the bank. We better phone Craig and give him some more casework. We better fill in an app, right? We just became a great grandparent or grandparent. We better phone Julie, our advisor, and tell her we want to buy some more insurance from her. We want to buy a policy on our grandchild, first grandchild, whatever. So you have to elegantly insert yourself in the client's life, right? You've already figured it out, the gentleman in the Hawaiian shirt back there, okay, who talked about the importance of enclosing the plan for the family slide I showed you. You've already figured out that you can combine concepts here. You can take a copy of Lynn's book and you can include it here saying, by the way, one step we haven't taken in your planning is for me to facilitate a family meeting, okay? When is your family gathering next? When are they getting together next? So do these things because they make a difference. Second last concept for the day. I'm the birthday cakes guy. I'm known as that, right? I have advisors that have had some phenomenal results with what I'm about to tell you. My supplier in Cambridge, Ontario is called atouchofcake.com. They do not deliver to Salt Lake City or Provo or Wyoming or wherever you're from. But you would show this website to your local cake boss. All of us in this room, I guarantee within a half an hour of the BYU campus, there's a cake boss. There's someone who uses fondant and sponge cake and creates magnificent cakes. So when I moved to Canada from South Africa, when I immigrated in 2006, 2007, I decided I wasn't going to hang out with the South Africans, you know, because all the South Africans who immigrate to Ontario, they all go to the same suburb, Thornhill, and they hang out in what I call the South African ghetto. And they all live next to each other, and they all talk about South Africa and the old times and all that. I don't have South African friends in Canada at all. All of my friends are blue-collar working, staple gun-carrying, local Union 35 and damn proud of it, Pabst beer-drinking, tattooed dudes, okay? They are not people who read the Wall Street Journal. I don't think my buddies have read a book for 10 years. I say that with love and reverence and respect, okay? We're into hockey. That's our thing, hockey. I'm a Habs fan, right? Because I was told, you've got to be a Habs fan. That's why if I'm dribbling this afternoon, it's because the antidepressants are kicking in. We didn't have a good year last year. That's my thing. Now, why do I tell you that? My buddy Scuba Steve turned 40 last year. He's a Jägermeister drinking dude, right? So there's Scuba Steve's cake. That cake cost us $45. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to your local cake boss, and you've got one in your town, and say to her, look, I'm going to buy 20 cakes from you in the next year. My budget is not $85 a cake. My budget's like 40. So we can do an adjustment at the end of the year. If I don't do 20 cakes with you this year, we'll have a little bit of invoicing at the end of the year, but I'd like to do 20 cakes and I'll pay you $40 a cake. And the cake can be as simple as this. You have a nice big cake. Let's say your corporate colors are blue or they're red or whatever. You have a big dollar sign on the cake and you have the words on the cake, thanks for being clever. That's all it says. Thanks for being clever. It does not say, thank you for taking out a whole life policy with me to offset estate planning issues. It doesn't say that because that violates privacy. It just says, thanks for being clever. And there's a big dollar sign. And then you have them put your logo on the cake. I would not send the cake in with the logo for compliance approval because it's stale by the time it comes back. But that's just my thing. I don't know if you'd want to. I would apologize afterwards instead of asking for permission in advance. In the cake, they take that plastic container you can get at the dollar store. It's like a Tupperware container. And they insert it in the cake, and that's got 20 of your business cards in there. And you, when you do a case with a client where you earn, let's say, $1,500 commission or $2,000 commission, you get your assistant, if you don't want to do it yourself, to deliver the cake with the box of Starbucks coffee with 15 cups to your client's place of work, 11 o'clock in the morning. You shut the place down. One of my private coaching clients gets a phone call after his second time he did this from a gentleman who says, you don't know me, but I was eating your cake and drinking your coffee this morning in our cafeteria, in our lunchroom, and I've never heard of a financial advisor that delivers cake and coffee to thank their clients for placing business with them, and I'm taking early retirement in 3 months, and I have $900,000, and would you come and tell me where to invest the money? $900,000 investment money. And this happens all the time. So why? Because people take a picture. Don't cut the cake. My heavens, take a picture of the cake, wants to tweet it, wants to put it on Facebook. And you know something? It's 20 business cards passed out to 20 people. According to all the statistics in this industry, 5 of those 20 people will transact with this profession anywhere in the next year. So you know something? You start playing. I'm a big one on edible arrangements. You guys have edible arrangements here in Salt Lake, in Provo? I love edible arrangements. You know why? Because that fruit tree that gets delivered at 10 in the morning, and you better write it up with your edible arrangements franchise, the fruit has to be delivered before 10 or 11 in the morning, or it's free. Okay? You don't want the fruit delivered at 4 in the afternoon, then it goes home in the trunk of the car to the kids, you're not buying policies. Must be delivered before 11 in the morning. They have to share it with their colleagues, otherwise this fruit is slimy by 4 o'clock that afternoon. And some of your cards that say, please share my cards with your friends who you share this fruit with. I thank you for placing your trust in business with ABC Financial. Everybody's standing around eating your fruit, looking at the card. These are the things that we should be doing. With $65 out of the $1,500 that we earned, if you took 3 to 5% of the income of every client, 3 to 5% every time there's a first-year commission, and you put it back into that client to display very flamboyantly how grateful you are, the business starts pouring through the door. It's an amazing time to be in this business. You should do 2 days before your birthday cakes. You should. I put 700 people from investors group through my one-year course. You know why? After I did regional meetings there, Morris comes in and speaks for 3 hours. Pizzas would arrive the next day. I almost laughed. Pizzas. 5 or 6 extra giant pizzas with a note which we'd set up. And on the front of that, thank you for visiting with me yesterday and investing some time in some new business ideas. I look forward to seeing you on the Top Advisor program. I would get 3 or 4 people coming on the course who didn't even come to the preview talk because they'd be eating pizza in the office. Everyone would go, where's the pizza from? Oh, you went to Anthony Morris's talk yesterday. Oh man, has this guy got a program? You better sign up for it. Cost me $200 or $300 for the pizzas. Think like an entrepreneur. A lot of us want to be entrepreneurs, but we kind of behave like a salaried bureaucrat. You have to invest in the greatest investment vehicle in the world, called your practice. So, I wanted to tie it together, this conversation, with something that's really huge. And if the ice cream bell goes off, as it did in the last session, 5 minutes left, I'm going to finish my story anyway, because it's important that we finish the story. I'm big on philanthropic and charitable giving. I think that you should talk to all of your clients, your business clients especially, and say to them these words: can you show me what you're doing through your estate plan to give back to the community who put you where you are as a business owner? John, I reserve this conversation for our finer clients like you. Can you show me what you're doing through your estate plan to give back to the community who put you where you are as a business owner? Because, John, I have a personal mission. In the state of Utah, I want to raise $50 million for Utah charities, not-for-profits and foundations. I have to do that in 5 years, which means I have to do $10 million in philanthropy policies a year, which means I have to do $1 million a month because there's 2 months for professional development and vacations, which means I need to do $250,000 a week, which means I have to do $50,000 a day. John, will you help me in my mission? Would you pick up the phone to some colleagues, some friends who could help me in my mission? And you know something? Business owners want to give back. Well, I want to tell you a story. Bill Strickland. Was anyone in this room at the 1999 Million Dollar Roundtable annual meeting? 1999, you would remember Strickland. He was 6'9", ex-basketball player. Bill Strickland changed my world. And I'm going to send you, as part of my follow-up from the symposium, where to buy the DVD, because you want to buy the DVD from the MDRT Video Club, because that exact speech was a knock-your-socks-off speech. And I want to give you 1 minute on Strickland, and then I'm going to give you a 2 minute YouTube video of him. Then I'm going to tell you what to do about it, and then we'll be done for the day. Strickland says, I went on the streets of Pittsburgh, and it broke my heart. He says, because I saw single welfare moms, and I saw retrenched steel workers, and I saw kids going to school without books under their arms. And I thought, man, what's wrong with this picture? The kids are going to school without books. He says, someone had saved my life with clay and ceramics and pottery when I was 5, and I wanted to pay it forward and give it back. He says, so I raised a bunch of money, and I built an art center in the middle of the worst part of Pittsburgh, which is exactly where it belongs. He says, my art center doesn't have no burglar bars. We don't lock the door. We don't have drug and alcohol people on the staff. We don't have razor wire. We don't have policemen outside or metal detectors. He said, and I'm 400 meters up the road from the Pittsburgh Public School, where they have metal detectors, drug and alcohol people on the streets, and burglar bars on the window. He said, I started dragging the kids in off the streets and teaching them ceramics and painting and pottery and clay. He says, then I discovered you corporations have rather large budget for social responsibility. He says, I help alleviate you of that cash. He says, because my art is rather expensive for your boardrooms. So now I have these contracts for all the boardrooms in America to buy my kids' art. He says, and then the moms came to us and said, you know, you can't teach the kids about ceramics and painting and this while they're hungry. So we put a little kitchen in, and we started cooking. Some of the moms went on gourmet cooking courses. He said, so my friend Senator John Hines, you've heard of him, he makes ketchup. He says, the late John Hines came by, and Hines said to me, he says, William, he says, man, that trout almondine you made at lunchtime was fabulous. He goes, do you do any industrial commercial training of catering people? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we can't find enough minority folk who are interested in food sciences for us to hire at the Heinz Corporation. There's a shortage of these people. He says, would you start doing that kind of training and build a bigger kitchen? And Strickland looked at him and he said, Senator, actually the building's finished and the paint's dry. So we can't do that, but I'd appreciate your support anyway. He said, well, if I cut your check for $1 million this afternoon, could I change your mind? Strickland says, looks like we're going in the food training business, Senator. He says, then I had these four food sales contracts, doing the boardroom runs and the cafeteria contracts for GlaxoSmithKline Wellcome and Bank of America and United Airlines. And he says, then Dizzy Gillespie and Spira Gyra and Herbie Hancock and Billy Taylor and a few jazz people came by and said, man, you've got to do a concert here. He said, we don't have an auditorium. He said, yeah, but you've got those Ford food sales contracts. We take those to the bank. We build a 600-seater auditorium. and we do a concert here, which is exactly what some of the world's greatest jazz people did. And they donated the lifetime rights to the music to him, which ended up winning a Grammy. He says, I'm that far from doing a deal with Howard Schultz at Starbucks that my award-winning Grammy DVD is going to be sold next to every cash register at every Starbucks on planet Earth so that I can build more centers and save the souls of more kids. And then the lights come up at MDRT. He says, let me tell you something. I didn't make that up. He says, it costs $49,000 a year to keep a kid in prison in America. He says, $25,000 to send the same kid to the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. It's $24,000 less to send the kid to medical school than to send them to prison, 60% of them back inside within 6 months of being released from prison. He says, you give me $7,000, I'll graduate that kid from all 18 of my vocational training programs. 93% of them get a job within graduating 2 weeks, within graduating from one of my vocational training programs. He said, do the math, people. We're going to bankrupt the country. He said, and I don't think the politicians are going to get it done because all they're focusing on is getting reelected. He says, it's the good guys like you and me using our time, our influence, our money, and a few of our friends who are going to get it done. So I want to tell you what I want you to do. I want you to buy the Strickland DVD of his MDRT talk. I want you to get a plain business card or a pack of them from Staples and put this statement on the front. The best way to help the underprivileged, you could put the poor, unless you think the word the poor is offensive. The best way to help the underprivileged is to make sure that you're not one of them. And if you like that statement, I wrote it. And then on the back of the card, and then to rearrange your estate planning to give back massively to less fortunate folks using other people's money. Whose money? Mass Mutual's money. New York Life's money, etc. And when you have a business owner that has a need, $200,000, $250,000 worth of coverage, do me a favor and print a quote for another $100,000 or $75,000 policy. Owner and beneficiary to be the Baptist Church, the woman, the shelter for abused women, whatever it might be. And ask them if they would like to put in place, because underwriting's rather happy with them right now in terms of their state of health. Underwriting's willing to do a secondary policy for $75,000 to $100,000. And the way to set the sale up is to actually give them Strickland's DVD to watch. Loan it to them. I have advisors all over Canada right now at the Rotary Club doing evenings of giving, and all they do is they show Strickland's DVD, and the people leave with their ultimate gift and Lynn's book and sample of plans at the side as well. And they have their Rotarians who are taking out $50,000 and $100,000 policies by the dozen, owner and beneficiary to be the Rotary Foundation. That happens all the time. If you can look at the churches, for example, do you know that we've got a problem with the churches financially? Go and ask your pastor. You know what the problem is? The kids don't want to stay in Utah when they graduate. They want to go to Melbourne. They want to go to Dublin. They want to go to Cape Town. They want to go to Dubai because they've seen these things on Facebook, on YouTube, on Google. It's hard to get teenagers to go to church these days. Fundamental traditional values have been tremendously affected. The kid wants to take their PS3 or PSP and sit there in the back of the church, right? We've got to have rock bands and all sorts of things going on. And Pastor Michael knows this. He's worried about the future of this congregation. If you can have an evening of giving using Strickland's DVD, why wouldn't you fold in the ultimate gift as a takeaway gift to talk values in their estate planning at home? And you can get people to financially secure their congregation with a miracle of a permanent life insurance policy. You put 100 of those on the books, they actuarially pay out. Some clients will die next year. Some will only die in 30 years' time. And you tell them that you are donating 50% to your first-year commission to that congregation. But there needs to be a deal that if the congregant lapses the policy, the church owes you that commission back because the insurance company is coming back for it. I want to close out my session and show you exactly what I mean here, because here's Strickland. If you check him out on YouTube, he's a funny guy. And here's the point. There's a Bill Strickland within a one-hour drive of here. There's a Bill Strickland in any community. And when you take it upon yourself to help others, become a go-giver instead of just a go-getter, and take it upon yourself to become a person that uses the miracle of life insurance to change people's lives, you wouldn't believe what starts to happen. Let's take a look at what Bill says. It's just one little clip to show you who he is here.
When I was out there at the Silicon Valley, I met another guy, came out of the audience. This kid said, man, what a presentation. I said, thanks, man. What do you do for a living? He said, well, I built a company called eBay. I said, oh, that's cool. You got a card. Remember, I ain't the techie guy. I didn't know what eBay was, man. So I stuck the guy's card in my pocket, and I went back to Pittsburgh and asked one of the little techie kids. I says, what is eBay? I said, holy smokes, I met the guy that built the company. So I called him up and I said, Mr. Skull, I've come to have a much deeper appreciation of who you are, man. And he laughed. He said, I thought you'd figure it out sooner or later. You're really on to something. Here's $500,000. I said, what's that for? He says, your first replication. And against all probability, Jeff Skull and I have become very close friends. He's got $5 billion. He's 40 years old, and he's a good guy. And I was sitting in his mansion in Palo Alto one night, and I said, Jeff, what do you need me for, man? You got $5 billion. You're 40 years old. What do you need with a black guy from Pittsburgh for with one program? He said, during your whole presentation, there was only one word in my mind. I said, what was that? He said, scalable. I think you're scalable just like eBay. So he gave me a pile of money. We hired a couple of guys from the Harvard Business School. We wrote a business plan and created a division called the National Center for Arts and Technology. And we're starting to build centers, man. This is the first one that's open in San Francisco. There's the space. That's Jeff on the right, Billy Wong. The kids in the middle. This is what it's going to look like on San Francisco Bay someday. This is the one that's now open in Cincinnati called the Cincinnati Center for Arts and Technology. The fellow that owns the Cincinnati Reds put up a big chunk of the money, and it's doing fine. And we have doubled the graduation rate for the Cincinnati public school system in 12 months, and I don't live in Cincinnati, I live in Pittsburgh. So you can't say it's me, it's the value proposition. There's the space, digital imaging, they're training technicians for Toyota. This is the newest one. Doug DeVos from Amway and a guy named Jim Hackett from Steelcase heard me speak. They came to Pittsburgh and loved the place, and Hackett, which is the chairman of Steelcase, a furniture company, said, man, this building is fabulous. My only criticism is your chairs are getting a little old. I said, well, last time I heard about Steelcase was in the furniture business. And he said, we are, and we're going to re-engineer you with all of our furniture. So in exchange for that, he gets a slide in my slideshow. It now costs $500,000 to get a slide in my slideshow. This is the building. Downtown Grand Rapids. It looks better than this. It looks like the Starship Enterprise, and we got the poor people in the next century, and they're doing fine. Palm Valley, I met another.
All right. So, great, important part of your business. Buy the DVD. Show it to 20 business owners. You'd be amazed at what starts happening. So I need to stick to time because apparently there are other proceedings happening this afternoon. If you want to talk to me about your company situation, if you want to talk about the course that I'm starting now, 19th of October in Salt Lake City, be awesome to work with you on the program, plug and play, step by step, bring your assistant if you've got one. We will revolutionize your income, but more importantly, your practices. I'm all about industrializing your marketing. What are the things you need to do every month that needn't be that expensive that can create significant impact? Even if you've got to pay for the program monthly, by the time we hit module 2, you've got more inbound income than outbound payments on your credit card. It's an investment, not an expense. Regardless of that, thank you very much for paying attention to me, for contributing, obviously, in terms of investing your time with me, and I hope to see you during the course of tomorrow, between now and when I leave tomorrow at noon. Thank you very much for spending time this afternoon.